Okay, I guess I'll call the meeting to order. Good morning, and I'd like to call this meeting of the California Water Commission to order. Keeping with our usual practice, we'll take public comments on each agenda item with a three-minute limit for each speaker. Anyone wishing to comment on an agenda item should fill out a comment card, looks like this, and they should hand it to Brianna, who's over to the left of the audience. We have Secretary Crowfoot speaking with us today about item 8, and we may take that item out of order when he shows up. So with that, I'll ask Ms. Mulla to call roll.
Commissioner Alvarado?
Here.
Commissioner Baker?
Here.
Commissioner Curtin?
Here.
Commissioner Quintero?
Here.
Commissioner Swanson?
Here.
Thank you. We will not be holding a closed session today. And the next item on the agenda is the approval of the January 15th meeting minutes, and we'll be voting to approve the minutes from the commissioners or from the commission's January 15th meeting. Are there any changes or comments? Nope. Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Yes. Okay. Ms. Mulla, could you please call roll?
Yeah. Commissioner Alvarado?
Aye.
Commissioner Baker?
Aye.
Commissioner Curtin? Commissioner Quintero?
Aye.
Commissioner Swanson?
Aye.
Thank you.
Perfect. Well, it is my pleasure to say good morning to Secretary Crowfoot, who's going to be joining us this morning, and he's got a packed schedule today, so he's going to be joining us to talk about the water resiliency portfolio. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Just-in-time delivery. Yeah. I love it when if all life could work like that. Well, thanks so much for the opportunity to visit with you. I'm actually headed over after this to the governor's state of the state. And so it's a big day. And then, as you may know, President Trump is in the Central Valley talking about water. So maybe appropriate that that you all are meeting here today, too. First, I want to thank you for the convenings that you held to collect information, perspectives, to inform our water resilience portfolio. So you all know that Governor Newsom, just a full year ago, actually, at his State of the State, really talked about our solutions on water not being a silver bullet, but really an integrated, broad set of things that we need to get done in the state. He followed that up with an executive order in April that directed our agency, as well as the Cal EPA and the Department of Food and Agriculture, to come together and to essentially develop a roadmap for the next 3 years on water. What are investments, programs, priorities that we should be advancing in the next 3 years to really build our resilience in coming decades? Let me say what I mean by resilience, because it's a word that's getting thrown around a lot these days. What we're really talking about is protecting people and places from the impacts of climate change. So we talk about climate resilience. When we talk about water resilience, it's how can we help communities, agriculture, natural places, our fish and wildlife actually weather these impacts from climate change, drought and flood, and adapt and ultimately continue to thrive in them. So as you know, the executive order set us on about a 9-month process to collect a lot of public input around what should be in that roadmap. And then as a state agency is to do our own inventory and assessment. What is the state of California water? What are the needs? What are the opportunities? And I'm really proud with what we collectively came up with, which is a draft water resilience portfolio. And I'll say that I had a chance to review the minutes or the notes from the convenings you held, and they were really substantive. So thank you for, one, providing the venue, and two, making it a really substantial discussion, because it really did inform this draft water portfolio. As you may know, we released the draft in early January and requested public input that would help us refine the draft into a final version, and we received it. We received over 180 separate comment letters from large associations like the Association of California Water Agencies down to individual academic researchers. So we are now in the process, myself, the other secretaries, our teams, of really going through all of that input and refining the draft into a final version based on that input. So within that, I wanted to talk just a little bit about infrastructure and conveyance and a potential role for the Water Commission. So you all spent much of your time in recent years helping the state understand how it should invest its Proposition 1 storage resources or funding. And that was really quite helpful. And I can tell you that those projects we've been focusing on advancing in part to help us meet some of our water needs moving forward. And so this water resilience portfolio really identifies the need for improved conveyance to move water around the state to meet our needs. So when we talk about conveyance, many people automatically go to the Delta conveyance, and that is modernizing, building climate resilient infrastructure that moves water that flows off the Sierra Nevada from north of Shasta to south of Fresno through the Sacramento, San Joaquin rivers, their tributaries, and through the Delta. One thing we're obviously focused on and we're prioritizing is to ensure that conveyance that moves all of that surface water and exports some of that from the Delta for large portions of the state is actually climate resilient and earthquake resilient. So obviously that's part of the water resilience portfolio. But less discussed is our improvements to conveyance that need to be made outside of the Delta. So for example, in the Central Valley, we have a real need to help communities there recharge their groundwater basins. As you all know, we are collectively in the process of implementing the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA. And local communities, according to the SGMA law, really have their own authority to implement a plan to reach sustainable yield. And implementing SGMA is critical to secure these groundwater resources for essentially future decades for community use, for agriculture use. Challenge is that there is conveyance in the Central Valley that is severely debilitated from actually moving water when it's needed, primarily through subsidence. So there is the Fryant-Kern Canal, for example, the Delta-Mendota Canal, the state water project or state aqueduct, California Aqueduct. And each of those are critical aqueducts to move water to farmers, communities that need them. Each is subsided in a way that's having a substantial impact on the efficiency of moving that water. So within this draft water resilience portfolio, we've identified the need for the state to play a role in rehabilitating that infrastructure. Now, there's big open questions about, you know, who should pay what for what infrastructure. The State Water Project, for example, is a beneficiary pays approach. So when we talk about the modernized Delta conveyance, it will be water users that actually cover the updating of that infrastructure, not taxpayers. Delta Mendota Canal, Fryant-Kern Canal have their own funding agreements. One started off, I think both started off actually as federal facilities. But we recognize, and we're hearing feedback from across the state, that there is a lot of infrastructure rehabilitation that needs to get done in different places. So I talk about the Central Valley, there are other places. And so what we've identified within the water portfolio is a real need to understand what are the most important infrastructure investments that need to be made across the state to build resilience, both within each region and across regions. And then what is the role for the state to actually play in that? Recognizing that the state should not be the only contributor of infrastructure funding for such projects. There are water users that should invest, and certainly federal government and federal agencies that should invest. But we think actually if we're really working on building our climate or water resilience moving forward, we have to understand what are the infrastructure needs in coming decades, and then what's the state role? So as you know or may know, within the draft water resilience portfolio, we've identified the Water Commission as a potential venue or entity to really help us assess, in partnership with Department of Water Resources and the Water Board, to assess the infrastructure needs, prioritize the infrastructure needs, and start to really suss out what is the state role in rehabilitating that infrastructure. We think you all are uniquely poised to lead that effort in many ways as a result of your experience in a very technical, very detailed process of understanding the public investments of Prop 1 dollars in storage and how they would generate public benefit. Also, you are obviously a public commission, and so it's important for us as we would undertake this dialogue around infrastructure investment, what infrastructure, where, how much, who pays, that actually ultimately there be a way that members of the public can actually interact and inform that process. So what we've talked to your chair and executive director about is actually calling for the Water Commission to play such a role in the final version of the water resilience portfolio. We are holding ourselves accountable to finalize the portfolio as soon as possible. And so we are almost to March, and I would anticipate that by the end of March, we will have a final water resilience portfolio. The governor is eager to have us finalize this so that we can really start moving on this roadmap. So that is really what I wanted to come and share with you. Most of all, to thank you for the work that you continue to do. We're excited to build your commission and fill the vacancies on the commission and are interested in your consideration of this new role as we consider infrastructure investments and the needs to achieve water resilience. I would be glad, Mr. Chair, to answer any questions that you have or hear any observations you have on the water resilience portfolio or anything else related to water.
I'll open this up with just a comment, and thanks for the acknowledgement of the work of the commission, but really the thanks is well recognized by the commission that it goes to the staff of DWR, Fish and Wildlife, and the State Water Resources Control Board, and of course the Water Commission staff. That whole team of people really did an extraordinary job since the fall of 2014 in putting together the thinking and the work, and also, frankly, doing a lot of the public testimony that was pretty tough. You know, there were a lot of folks who had to, and I see some of the folks sitting in the audience, who had to testify in front of project proponents, and there was some serious grilling going on. So really my thanks, I think our thanks, goes to the folks that really made it possible for the commission and, frankly, the public to clearly understand what was at issue and the kinds of decisions that we had to make. And I think a really good measure of the clarity with which the staff worked was that we really didn't get pushback from a set of very complex decisions that we made. So thanks to the folks and agencies. So I'll open it up to any of the other commissioners. Commissioner Alvarado.
Hi, Secretary. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. I think, as you rightly stated, in preparing for climate change, we need all hands on deck. We need us all working together to prepare our system. And I think one of the questions that arises for me is, I would love your thoughts about what are your expectations around the Water Commission's specific role. One of our goals in our new strategic plan states that we are to serve as a primary public forum. But I'd like to get more clarity from you, of course, working with the partner agencies. What would be your expectations around our playing that role?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I don't have a terribly prescriptive answer. I think we need to shape that. I think our Department of Water Resources Director, Carla Namath, and I share an interest in the Water Commission playing more of a central role in the discussion of water supply and water operations. As she's educated me on the Water Commission, I've come to understand that there was at least a historic expectation that the Water Commission could be a public forum for discussions about the state water project and the discussions about the water operations within our agency. So one is, I think, you know, we want, you know, you all to play a more central role than in the past on questions that we're tackling on water. I think when Prop 1 was passed and the storage chapter provided the authority of the Water Commission, that gave you a very central role in a critical question. But we would rather start to institutionalize the commission's role rather than have it be episodic based on specific tasks. So I do think that you know, as we roll into this water resilience portfolio, this focus on infrastructure could be a really appropriate place to begin to institutionalize more of that kind of public forum on central questions of water within our administration. Yeah.
Mr. Swanson.
Secretary Crowfoot, thank you for being here, and thank you for presenting this clarity around this idea. I know you're in a hurry to go. I just want to ask, how soon do you want us to come back with feedback?
That's a great question. I appreciate that. I would say, you know, if you were able to, appropriately consider, you know, this role we're calling for within the water portfolio in the next couple of weeks would be helpful, given that we're trying to finalize this portfolio. What we're not asking for is a detailed 10-point plan of the role that you would play. Importantly, you know, Department of Water Resources and the Water Board also have some adjacent tasks within the draft portfolio about really understanding what is the capacity for infrastructure to move water given predictions on climate change. So if we're building a puzzle, the Water Commission we envision to be a piece, but it needs to click into these other pieces too. But I think that we'd like to understand or have confirmed your general interest as a commission in playing this role. And then if that were the case, then we would spend spring, summer really fleshing out what that would look like.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Good morning.
Morning.
So you're touching on some issues that are always, for me, the sort of the fundamental questions, basically governance. When we had a role actually distributing money, things got very interesting around here. But it got pretty complex. I know the Water Resources Agency or whatever the department has worked very hard over the years to try to institute regional water plans. And it's extraordinarily complex. You mentioned two other bodies that also have a lot of say over things. Is there any approach or look at the governance issues that might actually help develop regionalization in a stronger way? Because there's thousands of agencies that have the ability to help, not help, hurt.
Yeah.
If you're looking at a statewide system, it even becomes more critical that there's a more effective governing structure.
Yeah. Really good questions. A lot to unpack there. You know, one, I would observe, as you would, no doubt, that you know, we are a system of systems in the state, and it is very decentralized. As you point out, we have thousands of agencies that are responsible for providing drinking water, irrigation supply, wastewater, and that is a real challenge if you're the state government trying to move an agenda on water. That's sort of observation number one. A second observation is different parts of the state have very different water needs. Some are contending with the primary concern of too much water, others not enough water, but even that materializes differently in different places. In our inventory and assessment, we actually broke down the water challenges by region, and it's pretty remarkable just how diverse they are. So you have a decentralized system and you have regionalized needs. So I'd say the core principle of this water portfolio is resilience. Water resilience will not be created from Sacramento. We need to empower regions to actually build their own resilience. However, that doesn't mean devolving into simply a confederation of these different agencies. The state still plays a role. On the regulatory side, we set standards, but then also within our agency, we really operate and maintain the backbone water infrastructure for the state. So to me, this question of governance is recognizing that we need to elevate regional leadership and that regions themselves need to come together. And instead of being, you know, siloed within their regions, to the extent possible, really organize around priorities. But then how does the state actually help fund those priorities, sort those priorities? What responsibilities does the state have on infrastructure beyond just a state water project? These are really important questions. The local agencies want state support. They have come to expect some level of state financial support. but it's been a sort of a shared obligation. So I think there's a really important open question on this, on infrastructure investment, which is rather than, I'll tell you the genesis, was that there are some water agencies that have come and said, look, we have real challenges with our water infrastructure and subsidence, and we need state support. And while we're sympathetic to their needs, what we thought, our conclusion was, we can't just take this ad hoc approach based on who comes, you know, asking for resources. We have a finite amount of resources at the state. We really have to understand what the needs are, develop principles around when the state invests and where the state invests, and then prioritize accordingly. You mentioned that this effort in recent years to really drive regional priorities. And Department of Water Resources implemented this Integrated Regional Water Management Planning, or IRWMPS. And the effort was really using the carrot of state resources to galvanize regional coordination. And I think it worked really well in a lot of places. It worked less well in other places. And so one of the one of our priorities this year is advancing a climate resilience bond for voter consideration in November. This is a shared priority of the Assembly, the Senate, and the Governor. Right now, 62% of our proposed climate resilience bond is water investments, because drought and flood are such critical climate threats. And within that, almost $3 billion, the largest amount that we're recommending within a category is for regional priorities of $1 billion. So your work actually this year and even into next year on infrastructure and really helping us sort and think through how we make these infrastructure investments could dovetail very well if we collectively in the state are able to put a bond measure on the ballot that's approved by voters. And then it can really help guide our allocation, our implementation of that bond.
So even with the amount of money we had to distribute, it was extraordinarily hard to deal with integration of issues, sustainability being the main theme, but groundwater capture. Every project was essentially looked upon as an individual, discrete project, and the connectivity to other parts, upper watershed management, groundwater capture, was not really in the mix. So I just would caution you that when you're going in this direction, if there can be some instructions that connectivity and interregional impact is an important part of this program.
I couldn't agree more. And it's tricky to figure out because our system is so decentralized and we've thought of projects in a really disconnected way. Right. But you're absolutely right. We talk about conjunctive use, right? So if we're building new storage, you live this with Prop 1. The question is, how does it impact the overall system?
Right.
We need to integrate our watersheds as the primary, the beginning of that water infrastructure. So I would be hopeful that we could craft a scope for this work that would integrate that and not set you up ultimately to make impossible choices between separated competing projects.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I mean, I think there's a lot of really fruitful conversation we can have about what the scope of this would be. And I think we recognize the problem statement like you do, which is we need infrastructure investments, but we haven't thought holistically enough, and we haven't thought in an integrated manner. And the work that you may sign up to do could really help us be better about that.
You know, I'll say that one of the opportunities that we could exercise relative to what we're talking about right now is during the deliberations around Prop 1, we took meetings around the state. So being able to go into specific regions and really bring this room to those regions and have folks present on the regional perspective from the state level would be wonderful. And I'm thinking about Jessica Morris as being just an extraordinary voice for understanding watersheds and the role of watersheds.
Yeah.
I think we're looking forward to doing that.
Yeah, and it speaks to your role as a public venue. Mm-hmm. You know, I do take the Commissioner Curtin's point seriously though, which is we would need to be careful about the expectations we create with a project like this. We are challenging ourselves within the administration to try to think differently and not just within the same boxes that, you know, we have in the past. And integration is a key watchword. So I think that there's real potential for a product developed by the commission with input from the public to really be a strong form of guidance for our work in coming years. We'll just have to scope it out appropriately.
Thank you very much. And you probably have to run. Should I open it up for the public? Are there any members of the public that have a question for the secretary?
Democracy at work.
This is your chance. It's really a pleasure having you join us at the meeting today. And thank you so much for all the work that you and your teams are doing. Really extraordinary. Yeah.
No, thank you. And I haven't had the chance to come to a commission meeting yet. So thank you for all the work you did on Prop 1. I know how challenging that was. And I can tell you that we are now really focused on playing a role within the state to actually deliver these projects, as many up to 8 as we can.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Excuse me. So now we'll go to, that was really nice. That was great. So now we'll go to the executive officer's report. Executive Officer Young.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, commissioners. There's a couple things that I'd like to talk to you in my report. One simply is that I want to just remind the commission and the folks who are listening that item 11, that state water project review report was not ready for release. And so yesterday we did send out a listserv saying that we will need to postpone that. So I know we haven't talked about that yet. So I wanted to put it into my report. I really then wanted to use the rest of my report to talk a little bit about your work, the commission's work in the year ahead. Looking at our strategic plan and the goals and objectives, certainly those span 5 years, but then we want to look more closely at 2020. With the secretary's comments that he made today, and looking at our strategic plan, I hope that it's pretty clear, and I will make it clear to the resources agency that certainly we wish to play the role and pick up that piece of infrastructure financing. It seemed pretty clear to me, so I will make sure it's clear to the agency. But looking more specifically at 2020, we think staff is really thinking that we'll be looking at pieces, several pieces within Goal 1, which, of course, is that place of being a forum for publicly looking at water management issues, educating the public, and then providing advice or input into other agencies or recommendations to other agencies. So within that goal piece, certainly the two pieces we were given in the draft resilience portfolio, should they carry over into the final, we will be looking at those. We think green infrastructure is another piece that we can pick up during the year, as well as staying connected to policy issues as they arise through SGMA, as the secretary was saying in his comments, as that piece is implemented, there are water management issues that will be larger that could be well spoken to or thought through in our forum. I think within Goal 2, we will continue with our state water project review on construction and operation of the system. That'll be part of what we work on as well. And then looking at Goal 3 and 4, I think things like approving any regulations that come up through DWR, other DWR-obligated actions, and also the WSIP Water Storage Investment Program items that we will have to deal with during the year will be a little more episodic, but will help round out that calendar. I want to talk a little bit about looking closer at the water resiliency portfolio items of the two items assigned to the commission in the draft. As the secretary was talking about, assessing the state's role in financing a regional conveyance will play a priority item this year for us, I think. I think it's important to have our recommendations by the end of the calendar year or early 2021 so that they can be considered and incorporated in any future funding program as they materialize. So staff is putting together plans to help the commission understand the conveyance need and how conveyance relates to resiliency. We see, as the chair mentioned in his comments to the secretary, we do see an opportunity here and probably a good practical way of moving around the state, understanding what conveyance needs are across the state so we get an idea of what we're talking about. But then we'll also need to come back and start talking about what the state's previous roles have been and what are the possible funding mechanisms that we could look at. There's quite a few out there, and I know that Commissioner Curtin has already mentioned enhanced infrastructure financing districts for the local share. So we'll be looking at those pieces as well. And then always need to come back and look at defining the state's role, because that's really what we've been asked to do. Or we could say, how do you look at that picture, and what are the public benefits related to regional conveyance projects? So that's more akin to how the WSIP program was put together. So we do think that we need to start working sooner than later, so we will endeavor to put those pieces together. I think the second action item directed towards the commission regarding research on flood insurance beyond the national program, I think that will come into play probably late summer, early fall. We are working with DWR on that, and I think there's some pieces that we need to digest with DWR to figure out how to put that together. So we're probably looking at that as fall or toward the end of the year. So that's, I just wanted to hit those two pieces as work plan pieces. I'm happy to answer questions. Certainly, we'll take what the Secretary said into consideration as we start putting together our work as well.
So are there questions or discussion? Commissioner Baker.
Joe, you had mentioned about the regional conveyance piece and talking about it, as the Secretary had indicated, about potential financing and prioritization, et cetera. And the Secretary also mentioned the bond. And I know you and I have talked about this a little bit in terms of timing. And I'm just bringing it up so that the other commissioners can be aware that the bond, I think, is anticipated to go on the ballot, or the plan is to go on the ballot in November. So it would seem to me that, I guess, the details of our work plan related to conveyance or regional conveyance, and particularly the specifics, will come later. But I'm imagining that we would have some role, assuming everything plays out the way it's currently is in the water portfolio, that we would play some role in crafting the language and the bond so that it hits all of kind of the target things we want to hit in our work plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear to me as it goes through the legislature and it's formed exactly how that will work and what it will say. So I don't want to put the cart before the horse here. But I think that as I've talked to the Secretary and some of the other folks around how this all works, I do believe that we can certainly put things together that would help any implementing agency. A lot of times, you know, the bond language isn't necessarily the piece that carries all of the pieces that would inform a guideline or a regulation regarding a finance program. So I think that's one way that we can look at it. But certainly, I am open to how we generate information and how it feeds into whatever is going on around that issue.
Right, and I think the important thing for at least for the commissioners is that there are set deadlines for when the bond actually solidifies and goes into print. And I think I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think it's like somewhere in late August. So, that I don't know if that will influence our thinking on this issue, but it is just important to know that there is kind of a solid deadline when it comes to at least the language in the bond. So,
okay, are there any other questions or discussion from the board? From the commission, I'm sorry. Okay, seeing none, are there any public comments on the executive director's report? Okay, seeing none. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay, now we'll move to item 7, which is public testimony. And although we can't take any formal action, the commission does offer an opportunity for the public to address the commission on items of interest, which
Chair,
are within the...
I think you have item 6.
Oh,
to
sorry.
Cover.
Thanks. Okay, I'm going to back up. Commission member reports, and I'll start with Commissioner Alvarado.
None.
Commissioner Curtin?
No.
Commissioner Baker?
No.
Commissioner...
Yes, I do.
Swanson.
Yes, I do. I just wanted to say that I was invited by Secretary Ross's department at CDFA to come and talk a little bit about the Water Commission at the World Ag Expo in Tulare last week. Got to explain a little bit about what we do and what our role is, and then have an extended Q&A with her board. And it was a great opportunity. I think we all learned a lot. There's a lot of interest about what's going on, obviously, in the water world, especially in the Central Valley. But I felt that it was just another emphasis around how important our role is, mm-hmm. getting out there, communicating, and having these conversations. So that was basically the gist.
Great. Thanks for representing the commission. I have nothing to report. So I will now move on to item 7, which is public testimony. And we do have two individuals who'd like to make comments. Paul Sethi with Alameda County Water District, and he wants to talk about the postponed agenda item 11. Welcome and good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Quintero and Vice Chair Baker and commissioners. It's nice to be able to speak before you once again. Good morning. My name is Paul Sethi, and I serve on the Board of Directors of the Alameda County Water District, or ACWD, and I'm speaking on behalf of our board today. Thank you for the opportunity to comment regarding the annual review of the State Water Project, the postponed item 11 on the agenda. ACWD serves over 350,000 residents and businesses in the cities of Fremont, Newark, and Union City in the southern Alameda County area. We're part of Silicon Valley. We're the home of Tesla. It's one of our largest water customers. We're proud of it. ACWD receives on average 40% of its water supply from the State Water Project. We were the original investors in the State Water Project and in the building of Oroville Dam. It's a critically important water supply for our customers in the Bay Area region, and we have a significant interest in the long-term reliability of the State Water Project and our South Bay Aqueduct, or SBA. We would like to recognize the continuing efforts that the Department of Water Resources is making to increasing the reliability of the SBA, and we understand that staff from the three South Bay contractor agencies, Santa Clara, Zone 7, and ACWD, and DWR have been actively working together to develop near-term, medium-term, and long-term plans for the aqueduct. ACWD is appreciative of these efforts and would like to express support for continuing this important work, as well as efforts to ensure long-term reliability of the State Water Project as a whole. We would encourage DWR to consider including highlights of the asset management and reliability efforts on the SBA in future State Water Project annual reviews. This is valuable information to document in the state's efforts and commitment to ensuring reliable water deliveries to the Bay Area as a part of the ongoing State Water Project efforts. And we're concerned about subsidence and other issues in the SBA that were highlighted just right now by Secretary Crowfoot. He said it very well. ACWD appreciates the diligent work it takes each day to keep water flowing to our customers, and we look forward to continuing work with DWR and our SBA partners on planning for the future. Thanks for the opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you very much. Okay, Maureen Martin with Contra Costa County Water District. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Chair Quintero, members of the commission.
My name is Maureen Martin, and I'm the Special Projects Manager at Contra Costa Water District. And my most special project that I manage of all is the Los Vaqueros Expansion Project. As you know, in 2018, the project was awarded, conditionally awarded, $459 million to the WSIP program. And later in 2018, we executed an early funding agreement for $13.65 million. And I have good news to report. We are making fantastic progress on all of the scope included in the early funding agreement. And I am here to tell you we're making such great progress that we are considering accelerating much of the work that is being contemplated under that agreement. And that is because we are poised to release our final federal feasibility report and our final environmental documentation. And as you may recall, that document is the cornerstone for authorizing federal participation, meaning the feds would become an investor similar to the state has already conditionally decided to. And with the release of this report anticipated in 2020, there is going to be required an acceleration of work that was contemplated under the agreement. And so with that, in response to that, response to increased federal spending, increased federal participation, increased local participation, we are seeking to amend our early funding agreement. Currently, the $13.65 million represents less than 3% of what our conditional award is. And as you know, the maximum that is allowed is up to 5%. And so in order to essentially keep pace with the funding, the anticipated funding from federal and local parties during this time window, we are requesting that we can be put on the agenda for next meeting, where we request an authorization from you all to amend our early funding agreement up to the 5% maximum allowable. So,
thank you very much. And since we can't discuss this, I think what we will do is, just as you mentioned at the end of your comments there, that we'll ask the staff to report back to the commission on what we can do relative to the statute, and hopefully be able to schedule this as an item on the next commission meeting so that we can discuss it and make a decision.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Are there any other public comments?
Chair Quintero, would you like to also invite Contra Costa Water District back to present more information about what they just explained?
At our next commission meeting?
If you'd like.
Yes, of course. Yeah. No, and I figured that what we would do is communicate with them that we will be inviting them back and getting this on the agenda for our next commission meeting. Okay. That closes the public comment period. Do we need to talk any more about the water resiliency portfolio? It's item 8. Nope, I think we've covered that. So now we are going to talk about Delta Conveyance. The Department of Water Resources staff will brief the commission on the status of the single tunnel Delta Conveyance project and planned engagement activities. This is not a CEQA scoping meeting and should not be confused with a CEQA scoping meeting, which is occurring today at Clarksburg Middle School at 6 p.m. On January 15, 2020, the department issued a notice of preparation of an environmental impact report under the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, for the conveyance project. The department will be holding scoping meetings to receive public input on the scope of the environmental impact analysis, including project description and alternatives. One of those meetings will take place tonight, as I mentioned, at the Clarksburg Middle School. In Goal 3 of our strategic plan, we state our intent to carry out our statutory authorities associated with the state water project. And within Goal 3, Objective 1 states that we will coordinate with the department to remain apprised of the operations and construction activities of the SWP. More specific to the Delta Conveyance Project, Objective 2 calls for coordinating with DWR to enhance public engagement for the new Delta Conveyance Project. Carrie Buckham, DWR's Environmental Program Manager for Delta Conveyance Process, will brief us on the project schedule and on the public engagement program. Good morning, Carrie, and welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. My name is Carrie Buckman, and I'm the Environmental Program Manager for Delta Conveyance with DWR. My responsibility is working on all of the environmental planning and permitting and working to bring this all together in a coordinated fashion. So today I have a couple of things I was planning to discuss. I wanted to go over the Delta Conveyance Notice of Preparation that was released on January 15th, talk a little bit about the Delta Conveyance Design and Construction Authority, talk about the public engagement that we are working on and perhaps opportunities to engage in the water with the Water Commission as we move forward, and then our soil investigation environmental compliance. So starting with a little bit of background on the Notice of Preparation, I think most people are familiar, but just a quick overview. In July of 2017, DWR approved a two-tunnel conveyance project with California Water Fix. In February 2019, Governor Newsom announced his support for a single-tunnel conveyance project and then issued an executive order in April directing DWR to assess planning for a single-tunnel project. So in May of 2019, DWR withdrew all California Water Fix approval and environmental compliance documentation, and at that point, all planning for California Water Fix ceased. We are now working on a new effort that we will rely on information where applicable and appropriate, but this is a new planning effort that we are restarting. And so in January of 2020, the state released a draft water resilience portfolio that Secretary Crowfoot was here to discuss. And based on that, DWR issued a notice of preparation for a proposed single tunnel project. So this shows some of our milestones. It's pretty small up there. So just a couple of things to note. We're trying to work on a three-year schedule where we are starting CEQA now, and that will continue with a draft environmental impact report at the end of this year, early next year, and then we will work towards a final document and decision in early 2020. We will concurrently be working on permitting efforts with the Endangered Species Act and California Endangered Species Act permitting starting later this year, and then working also on water rights, delta plan consistency, and other environmental permits. So this shows our overall environmental review process, and there are four main steps highlighted on here. We're starting now with the initial outreach with the release of our notice of preparation and scoping meetings that are underway right now. The results of those scoping meetings will be summarized into a scoping summary report, and that will help us identify our overall agency outreach plan. From there, we'll move into the project definition, the second line on this chart, where we will be formulating alternatives based on the comments we're receiving during scoping, further defining the project, completing technical reports that analyze the technical aspects of the alternatives, and combining that information into an impact and mitigation analysis that will be documented in the third line, first in an admin draft EIR and then in a public draft EIR. And that will be a major public involvement opportunity for people to review the draft document, and we will also hold public hearings to talk about the document. And then we'll move into the fourth line of the final EIR, where we will select a preferred alternative, respond to comments, and complete a final EIR notice of determination. So a couple of things about the notice of preparation. The purpose is to document the intent to develop an EIR for the Delta Conveyance Project. It triggers the start of scoping, describes the proposed project, including probable environmental effects, and provides a notice about scoping meetings and how to make a scoping comment. One of the things that people regularly comment on is that it does include a proposed project, and people think that that means that we've already made a decision on the project to implement, but CEQA requires us to include a description of the proposed project so that people have something to comment on. It's a starting point. It is not a decision on what to implement, so I wanted to highlight that. You know, when we looked at the chart on the last page, we are at the beginning of a three-year process, so there's still quite a bit of work to do before we make a decision. So the NOP documents the purpose and objectives. These are the fundamental reasons that DWR is considering the proposed project. So the purpose is to develop new diversion and conveyance facilities in the Delta necessary to restore and protect the reliability of water deliveries in a cost-effective manner consistent with the state's water resilience portfolio. And the specific objectives are to address sea level rise and climate change, minimize water supply disruption due to seismic risk, protect water supply reliability, and provide operational flexibility. So So this slide shows the project area. The main construction would be within the statutory delta. Well, all of the construction would be within the statutory delta. But there could be indirect effects upstream to the waterways that flow into the delta, or indirect effects in the water service areas that could receive water from the conveyance facility. So that includes the green areas that are the state water project areas, and potentially the yellow areas that are the Central Valley project areas. Proposed project facilities include intake facilities on the Sacramento River. This map is from the Notice of Preparation, where there is a bigger version. This is a little small. There are three dots on this map that show intake facilities, but we would only be looking at two of those three. There are tunnel reaches and tunnel shafts, forebays, potentially an intermediate one in the middle, and a southern forebay at the terminal end of the tunnels, and those would be to help manage the hydraulics within the tunnel. A pumping plant from the tunnel up into the southern forebay, and conveyance facilities from that forebay to the existing pumping facilities in the South Delta. Talking about each of those components a little bit more, we do have two potential corridors included in the NOP. The yellow corridor through the Central Delta is similar to what was included in the WaterFix documents, and the purple to the east is a different tunnel alignment. We wanted to look at trade-offs, trying to move the facilities out of the Central Delta, understanding that may result in other impacts that have not yet been characterized. We would only pick one of those two, and we do not yet have a preference for those. The NOP identifies a proposed project capacity of 6,000 CFS combined between two intakes that would be 3,000 CFS each located along the Sacramento River. And we identified in the NOP that we would likely consider alternatives that would be in the range of 3,000 to 7,500 CFS, but we haven't finalized alternative selection and we won't until after scoping is complete. So operations of the project. This is the new Delta conversion facility would be operated together with the existing South Delta pumping facilities. It would not replace the existing South Delta pumping facilities. And operations would increase DWR's ability to capture water during high flow events. So the initial operating criteria, we would come up with some initial operating criteria that we'll analyze in the environmental documentation, but we do recognize that during the environmental permitting process, additional requirements may be added through the Endangered Species Act or water rights processes. For alternatives development, DWR will select a reasonable range of potentially feasible alternatives that meet project objectives and present opportunities to reduce impacts. The scoping period provides an opportunity for the public to comment on alternatives. Following scoping, we will look at all of the information received, formulate alternatives, and publicize that information that we would, and document the alternatives we intend to include for detailed evaluation in the draft EIR. So as I mentioned, we are currently in the public scoping process. Public comments are due by March 20th, and as Commissioner Quintero said, any comments received today are not part of the official scoping process, so I would include anyone who wants to submit comments to submit them through the official process. But this identifies the eight meetings that we have scheduled. Tonight is meeting 5 of 8 in Clarksburg, and we have one tomorrow night and one March 2nd in Reading. The March 2nd meeting was added a bit later in the process in response to public request. So moving on to my next topic, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Delta Conveyance Design and Construction Authority, or the DCA. We receive a lot of comments about how DWR and the DCA work together, and so we wanted to start that discussion. So the DCA was established as a joint powers authority between the participating public water agencies, or PWAs. And so it has a board of directors that is composed of elected officials from the PWAs. And the board was established to have 7 members, but it currently has 4 based on the agencies that have decided to participate. So the DCA has a joint exercise of powers agreement with DWR. Originally, the DCA was set up to start design and construction of WaterFix, and so that has changed to provide design support and for environmental planning now that we have restarted with the Delta Conveyance Project. And DWR is directing this work and providing oversight. Currently, DWR has asked the DCA to develop preliminary designs for the proposed project, both of the corridors and potential capacities between 3,000 and 7,500 CFS. We will be asking them to further work on the alternatives when we have those identified. And we've asked them, as they're working on those designs, to consider ways to avoid or minimize construction-related effects to local communities. We want all of that information incorporated during the design process rather than waiting for the environmental process to identify and mitigate impacts. So the way that DWR and DCA work together, DWR's role is to lead the environmental review and planning effort, including CEQA and the other environmental permits. We are leading public outreach, public participation, and stakeholder engagement activities. We ensure transparency. We are responsible for managing the planning budget and planning schedule. And we report on progress to the state legislature and others, and we direct and oversee the work of the DCA. DCA's role is that under the oversight of DWR, the DCA will conduct engineering and design work to inform the environmental review and planning process, identify potential engineering and design strategies to avoid and or minimize impacts, assist in conducting public outreach, public participation, and stakeholder engagement activities. And we also wanted to mention the role of the public water agencies because they are the agencies that comprise the DCA. So they serve on the DCA's board, and additionally, they help provide technical expertise to both DWR and the DCA. They collaborate on and contribute to public participation and public outreach, and they ensure that the planning and project development meet the financial, policy, technical, and long-term planning needs of their retailers, member agencies, and ratepayers. So one of the things that the DCA does is the Stakeholder Engagement Committee, but before we hit that, I wanted to just talk in general about our public engagement efforts that we have going on. So one of the most immediate ones is the public scoping. So we have 8 public scoping meetings. They are pretty formal processes. We give a brief presentation. We have a short period for clarifying questions, but the main part of the meeting is to allow us to listen to comments from the public. So it's not a very interactive discussion. It's really... It's a listening session more than anything else. Public hearings after the draft will be similar. We are contemplating a series of technical workshops. One of the things we want to do is give the public access to technical experts on topics that interest them. So, for example, one of the things that's come up a lot is climate change, that people don't necessarily have a great understanding of how climate change will affect their areas or the Delta. Also, things that have come up is that people would like a better understanding of how the State Water Project operates, some of the basics. And so we're thinking about a series of technical workshops to give people that interactive access to technical experts to help them understand complicated topics. We're working on disadvantaged community outreach. We have a specific consultant that is working on reaching out to disadvantaged communities in advance of the scoping meetings to make sure that they know about the meetings. If they need any help in obtaining information, they're there to help them and really encourage them to submit scoping comments and or attend the meetings. We're also offering that if people have a better forum that would be easier for them to attend, we're happy to come talk to them individually or in a different type of meeting setting. Then the DCA is running the Stakeholder Engagement Committee, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then we've also talked about, I'd like to talk about how we may work with the Water Commission on public engagement. So the DCA Stakeholder Engagement Committee. The DCA board has formed a Stakeholder Engagement Committee to help identify ways to design and construct the project that would avoid or minimize effects to local communities and the Delta as a place. So they solicited applications for 17 members, and they represent different stakeholder groups in the Delta. There are also up to 5 ex officio members to provide information. I think right now 2 of those positions are filled. When the members applied for this position, they not only did they explain their role on the committee, but they also talked about how they would share the information that they received during the committee and bring back information. So after each meeting, they go and they talk to their stakeholder groups and bring information to the SEC to try to expand the reach of this committee beyond just the 17 people that are a part of it. And one of the important pieces of this is that members do not need to agree with the project. I'm not sure that any of them support the project, but the idea is that trying to identify ways that if it does move forward, it could be done in a way that has less of an effect to the local communities. That's something that's important to us and the DCA. Excuse me. So the committee role, as a committee to the DCA board, the topics are limited to the work completed by the DCA. So the committee focuses on design and construction-related activities. This has been a little bit confusing for everyone because right now this is an environmental planning process. I go to the committee meetings and people want to sometimes talk about environmental issues. But as a committee to the DCA board, they are really focused on the work that the DCA is doing. They meet once or twice a month. They've had, I think, 4 or 5 meetings so far, and the next one is next Wednesday. They are a Brown Act body, and the last bullet is very important, that it does not take the place of public involvement under CEQA. DWR is still doing a full public engagement effort, but this is an opportunity for people to understand more of the design details and provide more detailed feedback in a different setting. We're also doing quite a bit of tribal engagement, which Anicita is going to come up and talk about next, so I didn't really cover that in my presentation. So for the California Water Commission, we've been talking a bit to Joe about how we may be able to work with the commission over the next few years. And DWR does not have a regularly scheduled public forum. You know, many water districts have their district meetings and opportunities for the public to engage, and we don't have anything like that. And so regular updates could help the commission in their role related to the State Water Project, and it could also help us reach a larger audience with updates. And so we're hoping that we can come and provide updates every 3 to 6 months, and we can talk about whatever topics you may be interested in and things that I think that the stakeholders and public may be interested in. So we're hoping that would have some benefit to the group. And then the last thing I just wanted to touch base on is that we released an initial study and proposed negative declaration in November. We had comments through January 20th, and the study was on proposed soil investigations through the Delta. The purpose is to gather information to inform and evaluate alternatives for Delta conveyance and provide information to increase understanding of Delta geology. The investigations could include soil borings on land and over water, cone penetration tests, and geophysical surveys. If we decide to move forward with this effort, we should have a decision probably around the end of March. Then we will need to proceed with real estate actions to obtain temporary access to the parcels where we would like to perform tests. We're working now with the DCA to develop an updated approach to obtain temporary entry. We would like to do this voluntarily, but if there are concerns with that, we will need to come back to the commission about access. So I have this slide in here about ways to stay informed. If anyone is interested in Delta conveyance, the best way to stay informed is to register for our email list. And on our website, there is a quick button to push to register. We also have a project hotline, DWR's Twitter account, and our project email. And I think with that, I am at the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much. That was very clear and very well done. Are there any questions from fellow commissioners? Commissioner Alvarado?
Hi. When was the DCA established? You say here it's established as JPA. And then if you could talk a little bit about that background, what was the original intent? And you talked about how it's been revised.
So it started, I think, in March of 2018. And it was originally established as WaterFix was moving forward after the period that DWR had adopted the CEQA documentation to help with design, final design and construction of California WaterFix. At this point, California WaterFix is no more. So the original Joint Powers Authority and the Joint Exercise of Powers Authority were modified to document that the process has changed. So particularly the agreement with DWR, which is the Joint Exercise of Powers Authority, was modified to focus on planning.
Is more fully developed?
If the project... If the decision is made to move forward, then I think the vision is that it would continue to function in that design and construction role.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open it up to the public. Are there any members of the public that have questions about this project? Come up to the podium, please. Mr. Sethi.
Thank you. I have a quick comment. Carrie Buckman gave a presentation to the Delta Conveyance Finance Authority board last month. I've been a director on that board since its inception in early 2018 as well. And I would encourage the commission, the executive officer here, to perhaps have our executive director, Brian Thomas, come and talk about the financing end of this whole project and the commitments of the public water agencies. And we have some critical decisions going on beginning tomorrow at our board meeting. And the scope of what the DCA is working on right now, They've already made $85 million in commitments, and this is ramping up almost in an exponential curve over the next 3 years. So the financing end of the obligations to fulfill all the work is critically important in terms of your understanding. And so I would just encourage you again, take a look at the other side of what's going on too.
Great. Thank you very much. Those are good suggestions. Carrie, could you talk a little bit about the soil borings and the commission's role with that, as you understand it?
So for the soil borings right now, we are reviewing the public comments received on the initial study and proposed mitigated negative declaration, and we're considering all of those comments and how to move forward. If we do decide to move forward, we anticipate a final document and a decision probably around the end of March, at which point the DCA, acting as DWR's agent, will go and try to secure temporary access to the areas that we need to do those studies. We are, as I mentioned, following a different process this time. So we are working to try to provide a more attractive offer to people so they may participate in a more voluntary manner. If that doesn't work, then I anticipate we would come back to the commission to try to work on access. I don't think that that would be, I think later this year is sort of the early side okay. for that timing.
All right. Thank you. This is sort of a silly question because I don't know the answer to this, and that is the two-tunnel project was called Waterfix. Is there a name for this project that is appearing?
Delta Conveyance Project.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear about that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions from the public? Seeing none, you did a really good job. Thank you very much. And we look forward to your presentations going forward with this project.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks. Okay, item 10 is the tribal engagement in the Delta Conveyance, and the Department of Water Resources staff will brief the commission on tribal engagement. The Delta Conveyance planning is going to include substantial engagement and consultation with the California tribes as required by AB 52 and the California Environmental Quality Act. Here today to speak with us about the department's tribal engagement program for the new Delta Conveyance, we have Anacita Agustinez, and it's my pleasure to welcome you. And Anacita is DWR's Tribal Policy Advisor. And good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having this as an agendized item. And I'm really glad to follow Carrie's presentation because this is really important for DWR in terms of our public engagement and understanding that unique role of where tribal relations and tribal government-to-government relations plays within public engagement process with state agency plans. So today, I am going to talk a little bit about what we've done at DWR, but I wanted to first just pull up this map, which is an image obtained from the Native American Heritage Commission. And it really just shows, you know, California from the perspectives of our tribal citizens in terms of this is pre-contact of tribal territories throughout California. And you're going to see a lot of similarities even on how we identify many of these tribal landscapes, tribal territories. You can see some familiarities with watersheds and our hydrology, just where people lived. And so if you go back, you know, to millennia in terms of just how California was populated and managed, it's very important to take a look at that. This here is a sort of a close-up. And I do apologize for audience that aren't able to see this land landscape here. But this is the ancestral land of what we look at as the Delta in terms of the Delta Conveyance Project. And the ancestral land is composed of, you know, the Nisenan, the Maidu, the Miwok, Costa Noan, the North Valley Yokuts, and the Patwin peoples. And we know that California Native Americans thrived here for thousands of years because they knew how to balance the land management techniques that allow them to increase habitat diversity and improve the health of plants, wildlife, and fish species. And the tribes in the Delta regions is further delineated through many languages. And you may be familiar with the Bay Miwoks, the Delta Yokuts, and even in the Ohlone territory, six Ohlone languages alone and possibly more, but the Karkin, San Francisco Bay, Costa Noman, the Wasas, the Mutsuns, Rumsuns, and the Chalons. And even in the San Francisco Bay, Costa Noans, there's additionally, further dialects, Ramatush, Chochenyo, and Tamyan. The current ancestors today in this ancestral land, we identify them today as the Buena Vista Rancheria of Miwok Indians, Thy Own Band of Miwok Indians, the California Valley Miwok Tribe, the Shingle Springs Band of Miwok Indians, United Auburn Indian Community of the Auburn Rancheria, Wilton Rancheria, and the Yochidehi Wintu Nation. So also, as a state agency, we recognize the non-federally recognized tribes from this area, the California Valley Miwok Tribe of the Sheep Ranch Rancheria of Miwok Indians of California, and the North Valley Yokuts Tribe. In the counties of Alameda and Contra Costa alone, there are about 23 independent tribes, and their villages are documented as far back as including 200 to 300 members with permanent villages and seasonal camps. And remnants of these village names remain today, such as Karkin, Tibun, Chalkin, Saklan, and Kasin. We know these areas and recognize them on our current mapping as Martinez, San Pablo, Richmond, Oakland, and San Leandro. So today I wanted to give you an overview of where we are at the Department of Water Resources in our consultation processes and through the state policies. I'm going to discuss a little bit about Executive Order B-1011, our natural resources tribal consultation policy that encompasses all departments within agency, and that includes Department of Water Resources and the California Water Commission, as well as Department of Water Resources tribal engagement policy. And then also the effect of the amended CEQA amendment, which is AB 52, 2014, which did not go into effect until July 1, 2015. Then the current state policies by our governor, Newsom, and his executive orders in 1019 and in 15, and how those relate and expand consultation and also other responsibilities that the state has indicated that we have as a state agency and as citizens in California to our tribal relatives. DWR will obviously continue to work with expected lead agencies to support the 106 tribal consultation with tribes, and we'll also talk a little bit about our tribal engagement committee development. Executive Order B-1011 was really important in terms of policy in California. It was in 2011, Governor Brown utilized this executive order to recognize tribal sovereignty. His ability to recognize Native Americans' rights to self-governance and exercise their inherent powers over their members and territory. It also indicated that the state will work with Native American tribes, federally and non-federally recognized, on a government-to-government basis to address issues concerning Native American tribal government and tribal trust resources. And the important thing here is that once Executive Order 2011 was established, that put into place a new position called the Tribal Advisor to Governor Brown. That Tribal Advisor position exists currently. It's staffed by Christina Snyder under Governor Newsom. She was reappointed. Her position is to advise the governor on all policies that are non-gaming related. And she plays a very important role in guiding all the state liaisons statewide and policy advisors in tribal matters such as myself. She convenes quarterly meetings to keep us updated and also provides assistance to us as we need it in terms of how we're relating with our government-to-government policies within our respective departments and agencies. The other thing is that the executive order also established the tribal advisor to also hold the second role as the secretary of the Native American Heritage Commission. Executive Order N-1019 was issued by Governor Newsom And in this executive order, he recognized that water is a human right and it's central to California's strength and vitality. He also used this executive order, as we heard earlier from Secretary Crowfoot, you know, to prepare agencies, the California Department of Fish and Ag, Food and Ag, the Cal EPA, and Natural Resources to develop a water resilience portfolio and reassess priorities. And important to that is the inventory and assessment to modernize the conveyance through the Delta with the single tunnel project, and then also the water resilience portfolio embodying several principles on strengthening partnerships with local, federal, and tribal governments and water agencies. And so that is spelled out in that water resilience portfolio. Our department assisted the tribal advisors in holding listening sessions, and we're happy to report that some of those concerns had ended up and comments from the tribal communities in the water resilience portfolio draft, and there's been other follow-up with comments on under that public draft. And then on, you know, going back to the water resiliency portfolio, item four, you know, the ability and the commitment for our agencies to continue to conduct extensive outreach to inform this process. And the big goal here is just strengthening the ability of the collaborative strategies we need on this government-to-government relationships that we have with sovereign tribes, local communities, and not only just on that government-to-government relationship with federally and non-federally recognized tribes, but also the communities of interest to these tribes that have been ambassadors for tribal communities with limited capacities, such as tribal governmental organizations and other non-governmental organizations that have been really critical in helping advance some of those roles when those voices were underrepresented. One of the most significant things that has happened under Governor Newsom's new administration was last year in July. He issued Executive Order N-1519, and this is commonly referred to as the formal, you know, public apology. And I can't say how important this was to tribal governments. You know, for the state of California, for our governor to state that, issue a public apology on behalf of every California citizen, acknowledging the centuries of prejudicial policies against Native Americans, and acknowledging and honoring Native Americans for stewarding and protecting the land that we now, you know, share and reside and thrive on. And this apology was for the instances of violence, the maltreatment, neglect, the genocide, the enslavement policies that have been a part of California policies as of the founding of our state in the 1850s. And he also, by Executive Order N-1519, reaffirmed the principles in Governor Brown's Executive Order B-1011. So he reaffirmed and incorporated by reference all the requirements of the government, the governor's administration, and all our public and state agencies to engage in government-to-government consultation with California Native American tribes involving policies that affect tribal communities. One of the Executive Order N-1519 did is establish the Truth and Healing Council. So the Truth and Healing Council will be a council that will be convened by the tribal advisor, Ms. Christina Snyder, and she's developing an advisory committee. Their Truth and Healing Council will issue an annual draft and resulting in a 5-year final report on truth and healing issues relevant to the Native American community. That is very nascent at the process right now, but we look forward to seeing where this council will take Executive Order N-1519 and how that will continue to shape our government-to-government relationships. I'll go back to this slide here. Before I leave this slide, I just wanted to emphasize the Natural Resources Agency policy of consultation. I know that the California Water Commission adopted that policy, as well as the Department of Water Resources. Our department also has further adopted in 2016 the tribal engagement policy. The links to these policies are provided as a resource at the back of this slide for public and for anyone's ability to take a look at that. One consequence of engagement and consultation has been the tribes also being asked to look at state agency policies. Many tribes now are developing a consultation policy in parallel to what state agencies are doing. So when you're working with tribes, you have to double check to see if that tribe has a consultation policy and an agreement to adhere to those policies. I know that the Kuruk tribe has a policy, the San Manuel tribe has one, the Rincon Band, and the San Luis Rey Mission tribe has a policy. And I hear that many more are working on policies because some of these policies, they want also the state. Well, state agencies, you have a consultation policies. We also have a consultation policy as a tribal government. And some of them can be quite lengthy, and some of them are very much, you know, something that has pretty much a 10-step process that says if you don't complete step three, you have to go back to step one. And so I encourage anyone that's working with the tribal government to also check if that tribal government has issued their own consultation policy. This is a listing of federal lead agencies that DWR has worked with in the past. We will work with any expected lead federal agencies to support the Section 106 consultation process under the National Historic Preservation Act. Familiar parties here are Army Corps, the Bureau of Reclamation, Fish and Wildlife, and the National Marine Fisheries Service. These are listed just for example purposes only. For the Delta Conveyance Project in specific, we do not have identified a federal lead agency. And these are various agencies that we expect to work with as the project develops. There will be some various permitting requirements that will require this permitting. When we work with federal partners, the federal partners have their own tribal consultation under federal policy. Sometimes they are very strict on only working with federally recognized tribes. We've been successful with some of these relationships that if DWR has a long-standing good relationship in our consultation process leading up to 106, some of these agencies on other projects have allowed and continued that consultation and expanded the 106 to include the non-federally recognized tribes. That is just a practice, and it's really up to the federal lead agencies. But I do know that when they know that a project is very much a processes has been very much ingrained with a process, many years of involvement with tribes, I do hope that in this particular instance with the Delta Conveyance, our federal partners are to be determined, will also take a look at that and be just as embracing with that process. So a little bit about the AB 52 CEQA amendment process. Those of you who are not familiar with this amendment, which was passed in 2014, it applies to gives prerequisites for tribal consultation, and it applies to any project for which a notice of a preparation, a notice of a mitigated negative declaration, or a notice of negative declaration is filed on or after July 1st, 2015. The Delta Conveyance Project does fall within AB 52, and it also relates to any tribe that is traditionally and culturally affiliated to the geographic area where the project is located. However, that tribe has the responsibility under AB 52 to request from the lead agency in question to provide notification to the tribe of any projects within that tribe's area of traditional and cultural affiliation. And so this is, you know, a requirement as a lead agency. We began the consultation process with the tribes as of our notice of project in January 15. The tribes have 30 days to respond affirmatively or negatively whether they wish to consult. What we have done here is that there is a parallel process of engagement what we deal with. there is the AB 52 consulting tribes, where a tribe that has requested through the amended CEQA Act of AB 52 to be on an AB 52 consultation list with our department. That requires that a tribe give an advance notice to DWR that this is our area of geographical and cultural affiliated concern. Provide a notice in advance of our January 15 letter, a formal notice to Department of Water Resources with an attached map of their area. That would allow for that tribe to be an AB 52 consulting tribe. In addition, because of our extensive tribal engagement policy at DWR and pursuant to Natural Resources Agency consultation policy, not only executive order N1019 and B1011, we also have a process where any tribe that wishes to consult with DWR on any project at any time can make that request. They would then, if they, for whatever reason, miss the deadline within 30 days of being an AB 52 consulting tribe, they could request consultation and be a part of the process through the public engagement process through CEQA, but DWR would consult and would be under formal consultation. And if any information was to be shared of a confidential nature, we would make sure that we adhered to that confidentiality requirement. Because AB 52 requires that any information, not just documents, submitted by a California Native American tribe during the environmental review process shall be included in the environmental review document or otherwise disclosed consistent with the government codes, and those are pursuant to the CEQA amendments. Consultation in AB 52 is concluded when parties reach a mutual agreement concerning appropriate measures for preservation or mitigation. And either party, acting in good faith or after reasonable effort, concludes that mutual agreement cannot be reached concerning appropriate measures or preservation and mitigation. So even though you have a closure of the AB 52 process, sometimes in an ideal world you do reach a joint agreement. There has been examples within DWR's past consultation where we didn't meet a mutual agreement, but you mutually agreed to conclude the consultation process, and you still continue to consult on that project. And under AB 52, a new term called tribal cultural resources was put into the legislative action. It describes tribal cultural resources as a site, a feature, a place, a cultural landscape, a sacred object, place, or object with a cultural value to a California Native American tribe that is either on or eligible for inclusion in the California Historic Register. And this is super important because when we're talking about the Delta, you know, we've been speaking, and earlier Carrie talked about the soil investigations. We conducted the soil investigations through AB 52 consultations with tribes and to conclude that process. During that time, we were introduced to some tribes that we have not worked with before, mainly some non-federally recognized tribes, and they were talking about the importance of Mount Diablo as a cultural landscape. And so this would be an identified tribal cultural resource within the Delta itself. And the tribes that we are required to consult with under AB 52 are listed under the Native American Heritage contact list as the starting reference point of tribes that you connect with. Their list is always constantly being updated, so anytime we have a department project that gets started, we always do not assume that we've connected with every tribe, and the soil investigations was a good case in point where several tribes came forward that we had not been in consultation with before that indicated interest in that soil investigation study. And so important under the tribal cultural resources definition is for not only state agencies but public agencies. This also has abilities for the public agencies to when feasible, avoid any damaging effects to any tribal cultural resources within their projects. The important thing here, again, is, you know, why do cultural resources matter to tribes? And why did they fight so hard during this amended CEQA process to include TCRs as a new term and new description under the amended CEQA Act? Because cultural resources are very significant to Native American tribes, and they represent their cultural values. It also, cultural resources reflects the indigenous human history of California Native Americans in California, documenting over 10,000 plus years of their existence pre-European contact. It also provides the factual explanation and illustration of human habitation and life prior to European contact. And in current existence, you know, there's a bond that still exists with the present-day descendants and their sacred places and sites, no matter how old or how small that particular cultural resource is. And these cultural sites and resources continue to have, you know, religious and ceremonial significance and are still in use by Native American communities. You know, throughout the consultation process under AB 52 and all our consultation practices under our consultation policies, you know, we are committed to maintaining confidentiality, maintaining the confidentialities of information that we obtain through consultation, and also developing non-disclosure agreements as necessary, you know, with tribes at their request. And also we've also learned on the issues of governance and the importance of that, working with tribes in establishing MOUs or MOAs in order to, you know, work with tribes in management and other instances of our consultation policies dealing with TCRs that tribes have identified that could have some significant impacts through other projects. So in the Delta conveyance process, we are the lead agency under CEQA. We have initiated a very broad pre-AB 52 tribal outreach over the past 6 months. That was a very new process for Department of Water Resources. I don't think that many agencies have engaged in a pre-AB 52 meetings many times, because if you look at the CEQA amendment, you know, you don't even need to move until you decided that you're going to have a notice of project. We knew that this project was very important. We knew from past experience on the prior Bay Delta Conservation Plan tribal engagement, the engagement under California Water Fix, how important the Delta, any conveyance in the Delta would be for tribes. We wanted to have a forum for tribes to understand what our role was in the Delta conveyance. And even at that time, we had not even had a project or a name, as that as your question, Commissioner. You know, what is the new name? And even during the pre-AB 52, we still didn't have a name for that formal project, but we knew it was going to be something different. We knew that it was on the horizon. We had direction from Governor Newsom with, you know, the water resilience portfolio and his executive order N-1019. We wanted to keep the tribes informed so that they would be prepared once the notice of project came forward, because the tribes, due to AB 52, only have 30 days to respond. And as very busy tribal governments, those notices may get lost, and they might have missed that window of opportunity. And we have had significant tribal participation in some of the various scoping meetings, and we're looking forward to, you know, continuing that tribal engagement. We're close to that 30-day window for tribes to say yes through AB 52. It's not necessarily 30 days from the date of mailing. It's 30 days from date of receipt, and so we are tracking that list. This is a listing of the various tribal informational meetings we have held. We had several pre-AB 52 meetings, September 11th and November 12th. The September 11th meeting not only included a pre-AB 52 updates on the new Delta conveyance, but we also held a water resiliency portfolio listening session with the assistance of the governor's tribal advisor at that September 11th meeting. We've had, subsequent to that, formal tribal engagement committee meetings, January 22, and what the next one is February 25. The scoping meeting that we've added, the 8th scoping meeting on March 2nd, that's going to be held in Redding, California. As Carrie mentioned, it was at the public's request and also at the strength of the tribal interests that attended the Sacramento scoping meeting on February 3rd. There was a strong interest, and many indicated it took 6 hours for them to drive to Sacramento. So in response to that, we've added the March 2nd Redding, California meeting. And these opportunities are, you know, we're looking for those public comments. There was quite a lot of tribal comments, but it's important to remember through a public engagement stakeholder process that if a tribal citizen is making a comment, that they're making a comment on behalf of themselves as that tribal citizen, unless they come forward and state that they have a delegated authority on behalf of their tribal government to be making that public comment. And so I encourage that distinction, you know, always to be considered in recognizing through your public engagement process, not only through Delta Conveyance, but any other future meeting, that you respect that sovereign status of government-to-government relations and also, you know, the importance of that delegated authority. Some tribes will utilize the public comment period, knowing that that is a public comment period, and not say certain things that that they do not want to be confidentially listed. And other tribes will utilize the consultation process and may not be part of the public comment period. So just because you may not hear from tribal communities during that public comment period, it does not mean that tribal consultation is not happening or that other tribes are not engaged. And that's a more of an important distinction for the communities and for the public at large in terms of that. This new project, Delta Conveyance Project, I've talked about how it is falls within the statutory requirements of AB 52. I do want to say that the Bay Delta Conservation Plan and the California Water Fix did not fall within the statutory timelines of AB 52, and they both predated AB 52. So this is a new process, and that was one of the distinct reasons why we chose to do an extensive pre-AB 52 information to tribes to show them that was very much something that was quite distinctive from what happened during even the comments during the California Water Fix, and that it was a new process, a new project going forward. You heard earlier about the DCA Stakeholder Engagement Committee. So we recognize, you know, the importance of tribal representation on that 17-member committee. We strongly advocated that there be a tribal representative on that committee, and we recommended that there be three. Our request initially was for three representatives to represent tribes throughout the state of California. We were fortunate to be able to have an appointed member as a standing member, Ms. Melissa Tayaba, representing Shingle Springs Rancheria, and an alternative from Wilton Rancheria, Mr. Jesus Tarango, who also happens to be the vice chairman of the Wilton Rancheria tribe. It's important to understand that when you have stakeholder advisory groups and you have public meetings and you say we have one tribal seat, that's a difficult situation for tribes. And one of the reasons for advocating strongly for more than one seat is because a tribal government, just like the County of Contra Costa, cannot speak for the County of Alameda. The state of California cannot represent the state of Oregon in a public process. So similarly, when you're talking about tribal governments, there's that distinction in terms of you've got the responsibility as being that one tribal voice. And that is a real strong and heavy shoulder for tribes to hold for all the tribes. So we were fortunate to have an alternate appointed, and both of them are embraced by that full committee, and they've asked Mr. Taranga also to sit at each meeting at the table. And so the two of them, you know, have become ambassadors in terms of sitting on that DCA stakeholder engagement committee. And through their efforts, the a tribal engagement committee is being formed. It's still being determined, you know, the roles of that engagement committee advising Department of Water Resources or allowing the tribe to make that distinction and that determination of how they want to do that engagement process. So, and maybe in future updates, we'll keep you informed on that development. The important thing in involving with tribal engagement is that these committees do not waive any tribe's ability to meet with individually with Department of Water Resources, and it does not replace any form of government-to-government consultation throughout the process. As any engagement committee process, it is really information sharing, and updates and the facilitation of communication. We also would like to look at these committees that are being formed. There may be more than one. There may just be a potentially tribal engagement committee composed of just Delta tribes. There may be another committee just composed of tribes with interests in just cultural resources, and then other committees just interested in the technical aspects of the project itself. So we're hoping and facilitating where those committees will end up. You know, we're also utilizing our network at the Department of Water Resources of, you know, the close relationships we've had with our various other tribal advisory groups. We've had a very positive reaction with our Sigma Tribal Advisory Group advising our department in the formation of guidelines and regulations of that new statutory requirements, helping us with frequently asked questions, putting together tribal engagement guidelines, the California Water Plan Tribal Advisory Committee, and our Tribal Water Summit Planning Committee. And indeed, many of the people we're working with now, tribal governments, are governments that have worked with us within these other tribal engagement committees at Department of Water Resources. So in terms of specific consultation, our formal notice was mailed to all tribes that gave us a notice of AB 52 consultation, and we also submitted at the same time a notice to all the other tribes who did not submit us a notice. So 177 letters went out through the state of California with the notice of project, and those were waiting to hear from the tribes in terms of that invitation for formal consultation. In terms of the role of the California Water Commission, you know, tribes have always mentioned that they wish to stay informed and also be able to not only be informed of state actions, but also have the ability to educate public forums. And I know that when I was convening some of the early engagement committees in terms of how they could help state agencies do our jobs better, and they talked about providing cultural competency training, stories and histories of their ties to specific areas. I envision that maybe in future meetings on Delta conveyance updates, possibly some reports back of some of the tribes also wanting to be on a future agenda, being able to talk about their historic ties to the Delta. When you look at the Delta and you are to do a search, there aren't any federally recognized or jurisdictional lands within the Delta proper. And that's because of the California history of termination of tribes and pushing tribes out of coastal areas and moving them to outbound areas. So many tribes, you're not going to find them in the Delta proper, but that is their ancestral land, as I reminded everyone on the second slide, in terms of where they resided and where they continue to practice ceremonial and you know, cultural practices in terms of information and sacred lands and collection of other items of importance to tribes, and not also in terms of, you know, one thing that we're not, haven't spoken heavily about is, you know, the relationship on the fish species and the importance of that to tribal governments. The tribes are recognizing the importance of educating a broader audience, and they are preparing their cultural histories, and I've encouraged them to do so, and encouraged them that if there's other opportunities to share that, I'd like to help be able to help facilitate that. And this would be, you know, a great forum in the future for that type of cultural sharing to engage the public. I also would like the California Water Commission, to, as you look at your year out of planning future meetings, to consider a venue at a tribal property. And if not a formal public hearing, possibly a listening session so that there could be significant tribal input at various parts throughout the state, not just on the Delta Conveyance, but other issues that are important to tribes, especially on their water resilience portfolio and other processes that the Water Commission is engaged in. And I'm thinking of the WSIP project as well as the Water Resilience Project. In the Central Valley, in the Northern Territories, and in southern part of California. And I'd be very happy to help assist and facilitate mm-hmm. such a meeting. And I know that there has been, you know, several outstanding invitations from tribes that have mentioned it. I just have not had a chance to be able to, publicly state that in a formal way to the commission. This is a link to our Department of Water Resources Tribal Engagement website. On this link here, we invite the public to look at the AB 52 consultation list, all the tribal meetings that we've held and will continue to hold. We will. We have a summary of notes, the summary, the agendas, and the meeting materials. In the future, we intend to have frequently asked questions from tribes as they come forward. Any other material that the Tribal Engagement Committee feels is important to share that information between tribes and state and public agencies and the public in general. This is also additional resources for executive order. So you could see B-1011, Natural Resources Consultation Policy, the Department of Water Resources, Tribal Engagement Policy, a link to the Native American Heritage Commission. So if you're looking if you're a public water agency and you're interested in knowing more about the traditional use and cultural practices of your jurisdiction, to take a look at that list or make a direct inquiry directly to the Native American Heritage Commission, they have a staff that can assist you. The other link is Protecting Cultural Resources. This is a great resource document on what is cultural resources and how they can be protected during fire, flood, and drought emergencies. And then what we didn't speak about was SB 18, which actually was passed in 2005 and predates Executive Order B-1011 that requires, you know, local agencies to consult with tribal governments. And that's the full listing there on SB 18. This is my contact information, and I welcome any comments or questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Anacita. It's always good to see you. And I know that we continue to look forward to working with you. Are there any comments from members of the commission? Commissioner Baker? Did you
have comments? Anacita, thank you very much for the briefing. It was very informative and very detailed. And I have a question, and I'm going to apologize in advance for its naivety. But it's kind of a three-part question because they're all kind of related. One, I was wondering if you can provide some, general comments about what the tribes might view as water priorities. And I realize that that's very broad because this is a big state and there's a number of tribes who probably have different levels of priority. And then any specific priorities as it relates to the Delta Conveyance Project. And then Also, whether or not under AB 52, under the definition of tribal cultural resources, whether or not habitats like salmon habitat or oak woodlands are encompassed in that definition.
Yes. In terms of your question on the tribal cultural resources, yes, it's not that is encompassing that habitat. And in terms of the tribal comments on what we have heard through our general outreach, the concerns now of the Delta Conveyance Project, as much as we've been able to share that we publicly know where we are in its very early planning process, I think the concerns are where the intakes are. And how large are the intakes, and what are the flows of that, and what is the effects of those intakes on fish habitat and fish species? The other, going back to your first question, in terms of what are tribal priorities, and I think it's understanding that the Delta itself, as we look at it as state agencies, I mean, we're talking about the Delta proper. What is our notice of project based on, an area's of potential effects? We limit it in, our thinking that it's just the Delta from the Sacramento, down, Sacramento County down to the San Joaquin area. And tribes look at the approach of any waterways more holistically, dealing with watersheds and more of a stronger ties into what are our effects with not only the state water project, but with the federal water project. We've heard those comments. We also heard those comments in the BDCP and in the water fix. And so, and many of those tribes who did participate in that engagement process, we hope that they continue to engage with us. We anticipate, the possibly some similar comments. We've yet to have the formal process begin, but we one of the reasons, when we were developing the notice of project and making a decision for pre-AB 52 meetings, was to let tribes know that information they have shared with in the past, please bring it forward. Don't think that is just something that's evaporated. As a state agency, we have to move forward as a new project, but I do think it's up to, the tribal governments to put together those comments and remind us and be participating in that engagement process. But these are things that we've already been told as state agencies through many different forms, not only on the Delta Conveyance project, but anytime we have any interest in the state water project in general. Tribes have participated and attended, other public meetings dealing with the voluntary agreements and other processes mentioning those things. So I think the biggest concern I know from tribes is as a state agency trying to define the Delta. And what is the Delta, to everyone in California? And also, I think one of the other priorities is understanding the Delta not being just a series of waterways that just started in the 1850s. And that is something when we look at, when we get into the environmental planning process and we look at cultural historic properties, and we tend to think of cultural historic properties, based on, its formal definition is anything that's 50 years in behind us, and tribes have saying that there's more impacts on that. And obviously any student of any Delta in general will know the history of the levees, how they were formed from tribal settlements and tribal villages. So we've been advised and informed, and we need to be prepared that there could be some significant cultural impacts and some sensitivity in sensitive areas. And so we're doing our best through the consultation process to identify and hopefully, avoid sensitive and sensitive areas through that process.
Thank you. Commissioner Swanson.
I wanted to thank you for such a comprehensive report. It was a wealth of insight for me. And I feel that it's been great to really understand the history and the distinctions that are so deeply ingrained in the subject. We also, I think, you know, want to talk to our executive director about looking at opportunities for the future to come and be at a listening session or something. I think that would be great, as that's, once again, number one in our strategic plan. But thank you so much for being here. It was very, very helpful.
My pleasure.
Any other comments? And I would add to that, including this venue is a place to invite tribal members to come and participate and comment on the work that we're involved with. That would be great. Are there any public comments on Ms. Agustinus's presentation? Seeing none, thank you very much. I agree with everything that was said up here, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, this moves us to item 12, which is a consideration of items for the next California Water Commission meeting. In March, we will be getting a briefing from the PPIC on the report that's called Priorities for California's Water. That'll be really timely considering the water portfolio and their strategic plan and everything else. We'll be getting an overview of the state of groundwater, and we'll be getting a briefing on the state water project's efforts in the Delta, as well as getting the state water project report. Thank you, Carrie. we'll also be agendizing the request from Contra Costa Water. Are there any other comments or additions? Okay. Are there any public comments? Seeing none, I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We got a second. We're done. Thank you very much, everybody.